Eveen and Company with Eveen Ihuliwan on RTE Radio 1.
Good morning. My guests this week have a business relationship that started with a family wedding in Dublin but has brought them to the fashion capitals of London and New York. Jen Kelly is a fashion designer who specialises in dressing women in clothes that are specially designed and tailored to fit their form and their lifestyle. Kathleen Garrett is a partner in the law firm Arthur Cox and manages their London office. Besides her busy career and rearing her young children, she's launched the Arthur Cox Irish Fashion Showcase to introduce Irish designers to new clients. So far this season, they've had events in Dublin, Belfast and London. And later this month, the last of this year's event happens in New York. So Jen and Kathleen, you're both very welcome to the studio.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Kathleen, am I right in saying that this relationship all started on the tube in London?
Well, it did. In terms of the fashion events, it did. So I moved to London about 4 years ago to head up our London office. And I travel in and out to work on the tube every morning. And I was going home one evening and I saw this woman sort of looking at me. And the interesting thing about the tube in London is that nobody speaks to each other and people avoid eye contact. So it was unusual. And then as she got the doors opened and she got ready to leave, she said to me, "Oh, I love your coat. You know, where did you get it?" So I said, "Well, you know, actually, it was an Irish fashion designer." And so the idea came from there in terms of I could see that the one or two pieces of Irish design I had seemed to go down really well in London.
And this was a coat that Jen had designed?
That's right. It was a very nice beige winter coat.
And Jen, do you remember this coat?
Yes, I do, clearly. You know, the design of the coat is simply that it's for Kathleen's needs, you know, so I knew it had to roll up in a ball, be pushed overhead in the locker, maybe hung sort of, you know, what, winter or summer, so it couldn't be too heavy. You know, really, it's a person's needs. And that really is the joy of having something made for you, because we can, you know, incorporate all of those small little quirks into anything that you buy, and ultimately you will have it as your nearest and dearest for, you know, long in a day.
So Kathleen, after this woman had complimented the beautiful coat and you decided, well, maybe Irish designers need to be kind of marketed a little bit, you started the Arthur Cox Irish Fashion Showcase, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But how did you first come across Jen?
It started with my sister's wedding a number of years ago. Jen opened a shop on Molesworth Street, and we both worked in town, and there were always beautiful things in the window of the shop. So yeah, one day we just said, look, come on, let's just go in and have a look. Can't hurt. So Jen made a really beautiful wedding dress for Myra.
But I can remember Myra's dress. It was a very short hand-ribboned dress, you know, so it was just a normal dress that she could have worn to any other occasion. But on this particular day, it was her wedding. And I think that's really beautiful because she could pick, you know, the cloth, the fabric. We could do all the fittings. We could have a sleeve or no sleeve. In fact, it didn't have a sleeve. And then we put a beautiful sort of satin jacket just with it, which was tailored and long. So she had two lovely pieces that she could have worn, black trousers or jeans with, or a coat to a nice party or something. And very often when you're having it made to order, those are the things that save you money.
Because Kathleen, you said you're still wearing that bridesmaid dress that Jen
made. Well, that's right. I take it out for special occasions. So, and I'm someone who has a small wardrobe. I have a few pieces of Jen's. I'm very lucky to have that. As a working woman, it's really great to have dependable pieces in your wardrobe that you can just pull out. So if you're going to that important meeting or special occasion, that you have something in the wardrobe that you know you can pull out, put it on, and at minimum, you're going to look good and hopefully you're going to perform well as well.
And you're wearing a jacket of Jen's now.
Yeah, Jen, so that's right.
When did you design this piece for her?
Well, I barely recognised it. Can I say it's probably about 10 years old? And it was actually made for an evening, part of an evening suit. But that's the joy of it. It's simply a grosgrain silk fabric and they do last.
And what's the relationship then between the designer and the client?
There's a sort of an age thing. We tend to get girls coming with their mother maybe for their debs or something. So we'll do a dress. Then if you're lucky and you've done it well and, you know, they've been happy and content, they will come for a wedding. you know, and then you never see them because they make babies then. And that's the end of it for, you know, that sort of, you know, peters off for a while. And then when someone's reaching a sort of 40th or something like that, that seems to be my experience. They come back then and need a little bit of handling, or, you know, if there's a weight issue or whatever, it's not a problem.
Tell me about that. Like, we all have times where we're going, I'm not going to go and get something nice until I get to that size. You know, is that something?
It's irrelevant. If something's made for you, ultimately, you will look more beautiful that day than something you buy on a shelf. They say buying something from us reduces it by, you know, two sizes. That we have been told, you know. So that's, if it's made in proportion, you can wear anything. But once it's made for you and you're taken care of, it's very simple.
But say in the last 5 years, what's business like, Jen? Has the recession really affected
hugely
the business?
I think you could ask any person here in Ireland how their business is, and the recession is number one on their list. I think in the first 2 years of recession, we had a lot of clients that would buy, you know, a really good cashmere coat or a wool suit, or like Kathleen, a business suit with maybe a dress to go with it. So sales improved because people had to stretch that one look. And that was the first 2 years. But, you know, ultimately, everyone's wealth or disposable income has been affected. And women more than ever, you know, always, you know, the household comes first. But I found that they were sharing their money, the older clients, with their son-in-law being redundant, their daughter being left off work, the mortgages having to be repaid. So everybody was affected by that. And during that time, you know, I made a lot of calls to people saying, look, is there something that we can restructure? You know, let's recut it. Let's do things. So I had to survive that by, you know, changing what they had, or knowing what they had, or even making, you know, in some days a skirt or something to go with something to give it a new life.
And what kind of prices are we talking about, Jen, for
Well, our prices are, you know, has drastically reduced because we have to stay in business and we're willing to do a deal with most people. But it's literally down to the line with everybody in Ireland, and I'm no different.
Well, if you're going into, say, I don't know, one of the large department stores in Ireland, you know, if you're going to buy a designer dress, that might cost you 1,500 euros.
Well, a Mrs. Beckham dress will cost 2,000 in Brown Thomas. Mm-hmm. We're certainly half that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we're not faddish. We're not something that comes and goes. You know, I'm 20 years in business and I intend to sort of see this through.
And Kathleen, you've set up the Arthur Cox Irish Fashion Showcase and you've run it in London. Is that because Irish women can't afford the luxury goods, or what was the philosophy behind having it there?
Well, the philosophy behind it was that it was very simple. On the one hand, I knew there was great Irish design in Ireland. And on the other hand, in London, you know, I could see from people I met in the tube to people at business meetings sometimes would remark, and invariably what was commented on was Irish made. And so I just thought that there were two markets, designers ready, willing and able to sell in Ireland, and a market that hadn't necessarily been tapped by them in the UK. And like, it was very much working women in the city of London. I just felt those two bodies hadn't been connected. And I suppose I just thought, with a little bit of luck, we actually could connect them quite easily and without undue burden really on anyone if we sort of shared the burden. So that's really where it came from. And I suppose the good thing about the fashion event was that it isn't just high-end garments we have. We've put a lot of effort. Cathy O'Connor has been a great assistance to us in sort of building a great lineup of sort of fashion-forward, different price points, different age ranges. And it kind of encourages people to go for things maybe that they wouldn't normally go for, which has been great. I've personally found it great. It kind of pushes you out of your comfort zone.
Kathleen, can I ask then, I mean, Arthur Cox is a well-established law firm. Mm. Why have they decided to get involved with something like a fashion show that's kind of, it's seen as a luxury, it's seen as a little bit frivolous maybe?
Well, obviously the idea didn't necessarily come from my business life. So it sort of came from working and just spotting, I suppose, a lost business connection between Irish designers and working women in the city of London. So this is obviously was slightly unusual origins in the initiative. But bottom line is, fashion is a business, and that we are able to support Irish designers, broaden their markets outside of Ireland, is something we are delighted to do, and it's been a privilege to be involved in it. There's a wonderful positive attitude across all the designers, across all the people who've gotten involved. And like, it was done really very much in people's spare time in terms of getting the first event off the ground. So, you know, we just had people just responding really positively to it in London. The collective and the can-do attitude I was faced when I decided I'd sort of stop talking about doing it and actually attempt to do
well
it.
Done. Jen, did it work? Was it a good investment of your time?
The initial show was so funny. You know, I mean, we literally, you know, the clothes arrived, you know, hours before the show. We hadn't seen models. We hadn't seen shoes, you know, makeup and hair was friends of friends. But it was all with an Irish connection, you know, and like literally a boardroom. And I was putting out the chairs and we were putting out the little brochure that somebody had done. But there was a fantastic, you know, good feeling. And just to say on the point of fashion being frivolous, you know, it is very important that there are industries here, indigenous industries that, you know, have been decimated and have been worked out of this country to go abroad. But we have a rich tradition of what we do, and the education of young people in colleges and in design, they have to have a future. So it's people like me manufacturing here in Ireland, paying our taxes here in Ireland, working here in Ireland and getting a platform with the help of Arthur Cox and Kathleen, you know, in another country. All this is really adds to a better world. Like, it's amazing that the music industry in Ireland, what it generates, you know, and the goodwill of what that is, what it did in the past, you know, with U2 going on and music. I would ultimately love that fashion could do the same. Like, remember when Riverdance was created? They say that Riverdance lifted an entire nation, you know, and that was a look, and it was music and it was dance. Those three elements, you know, really put Irish people and Irish culture in the world, you know, and in a contemporary way.
And they were your designs as well, Jen. You designed the first production of
Riverdance. I designed all the original shows for Riverdance, and I'm very proud of that. And I'm certainly, it was immense to see the reaction from New York to Sydney or to Vancouver. And Irishness was hip. And that fashion does that. Fashion does lift people. And it's very important as how other people see a nation. And that's why I think, you know, we have rich, rich industries here in Ireland, and we have to revive those.
Is it important, Kathleen, for diaspora then, do you think, that, you know, you're working abroad in London, is it important that you can kind of fly a flag for Ireland by wearing that,
of course,
the designer clothes?
Well, yeah, it's wonderful. But like, the reality is, it goes down so well. So it is all for the taking, because when you see the reaction of people to the fashion, it's so encouraging. And the people who come to look, while we do obviously attract the Irish diaspora and Irish connected people in the different cities, we also have international people. So people from all corners of the world who are working in London come. And it's just so encouraging to see how well it goes down, and also what fantastic creative talent there is across, you know, the different lines. So it's very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Jen, Kathleen. Kathleen, you've chosen our first piece of music this morning. It's a Beatles song. Can I ask you why you chose it?
I chose it. It's The Yellow Submarine, which isn't necessarily the Beatles' best song, but it brings me back to my early years and time spent in my grandmother's house, which was located on a farm in North County Dublin, about a mile from Ballymun roundabout. So I suppose it brings me back to the things we did there. So my grandmother had a very organised house. So there was washing on a Tuesday, and a very particular way to do the sheets. And we'd stand under the sheets as they were shaken out. We made lemon curd, you know, blackberry jam. We picked the blackberries. You know, she knitted hot water bottle covers, and we picked the colours. And then she was a great proponent of hats and coats and out into the garden. So we were often dispatched. So there was a fair amount of apple tree climbing, hanging out of rope swings, walking around making fishing rods out of sticks and rope. And funnily enough, we didn't ever catch any fish in that stream.
Wonder why.
And trying to send bottles to
America.
Messages in the bottle, yeah. So I'm sure there's one still in Santry Woods. So the reason why the Beatles, my uncles and aunts were still living at home largely then, and they were big Beatles fans. And just for some reason, I suppose that song reminds me of it. And also sort of the slightly adventurous and innovative approach particularly my uncles had to what they thought two little girls might like to do. So there's a lot of throwing offers across the room. That was a favourite.
Right.
And piggybacks or shoulder backs.
So, Kathleen, you sound like you're a real tomboy, which you'd never imagine of it now, but fun times and actually...
Yeah, so fun times. Yeah,
unusual that was in Ballymun, you know, at the time the old farmlands were there.
Well, that's right. Like, I think in those days, the countryside pretty much started. You sort of left the roundabout, there was St. Papin's Church and you hit Roger's shop and at that point it was sort of countryside you were in. So, yeah, so different time, a bit of a magical time and a bit of a magical place.
We all live in a yellow submarine. Yellow submarine, yellow submarine. We all live in a yellow submarine. Yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
Kathleen, what did you want to be then when you were a little girl, when you were that age in your granny's house?
I think I wanted to be an actress. There was no talent to support that idea, but yes, an actress, yeah.
And what made you want to go into law then?
For work experience, when I was 16, my mother had cousins in Newry who had a solicitor's practice. So I went up there for a week and I suppose that always stuck in my head, just the diversity of what a small practice did. So there was litigation, one going to the courts in Belfast. There was closing a property sale, going to visit the premises, and then meetings in the office. So I suppose I liked the range of things that was involved in law. But then nonetheless, I had selected medicine. And then after I did the Leaving Cert, but before the results came out, I changed to law.
There's a huge change between medicine and law.
I know. That was a very memorable week and struck a chord with me. My sister, through her own route, did law just ahead of me. So obviously I would have had anecdotal chat about what that involved in UCD. So
I like the idea that it's an actress or a lawyer.
Yeah, some similarities,
yeah,
do you think,
like,
Jen?
You know, I mean, how does that work? You know, so.
and Jen, you grew up in Derry and your mum, who's also called Kathleen, was a really great influence in your life. Do you credit her for you having a drive to succeed then in what you're doing?
Well, interesting, you put that spin on it at the end, drive to succeed. Yes, absolutely, because she was a very go-getter. But most women in Derry, like I grew up working class family in Derry, the shirt factories were never far from where I was born, which was the Bogside. But women mainly played such a part in life in Derry and the strength of the women that I think that like I was pairing shirts that my aunt would bring home, you know, where they would cut the collars and I could pair them and use the shears.
What does pair mean?
Pairing the collars means cutting back all the waste so that the sewers could sew it perfectly the next day. So women would bring that home, you know, and get a little bit of extra money.
So actually started working in fashion at quite a young age.
Very. Well, I didn't really regard it fashion. Like, I mean, when you're doing it for your living, it's work. Mm-hmm. It's simply a trade. But it was wonderful seeing the women when the horns would go in the factories, all walking down Fawn Street to the Bogside or to the ghetto or wherever they lived, you know, and the friendliness and the happiness and the camaraderie that was a work ethic then. You know, they say that women who were pregnant, the other women would do their work for them in the factory so that the supervisor wouldn't know it, so it would go unnoticed so they could support their family more. So all of this is a respect that ultimately that I have for women, and very much that's part of where I was brought up and life in Ireland.
And Jen, we've already spoken about Riverdance and that you designed for the original production of it. Was it useful in designing for Riverdance that you had also been an Irish dancer yourself and a very good one, apparently?
Apparently, yeah. It was useful. You know, it's knowing the character of that. But Riverdance was a movement that was unlike no other one. It was just a phenomena of that time. I remember Moya Doherty saying to me, Jen, we've got to make this show look as though we've spent money on it. And I'll give you an insight, right? We created 400 costumes. And I had sent my budget to Moya. And of course, Moya, being the good producer, sent it back and says, it's more like this. That means the figure. And the figure was 22,000, including my design fee for an entire show of 400 costumes. And those costumes, now this is the bit that I stand over my trade, were still in that show 2.5 years later after working 8 performances a week. So those people wore those dresses every day for 7 days. So yes, it taught me how to make things last and to make things, you know, worthwhile.
And tell me, why were you Irish dancing? Was that a big part of Derry culture?
Well, everybody in Derry can dance, sing or run fast, you know. I was sent to Irish dancing because I didn't walk until I was, I think, about 5. I had a Perthian disease in my hip and I was sent to Irish dancing to sort of strengthen my hips, you know. I was in a pram up until that age because I couldn't walk and I had calipers. So now you wouldn't know that today if you saw me boogieing on the dance floor. I can, you know, cut a stride. But, you know, I'm certainly proud of my culture and I'm certainly proud of my Irish dancing. But Irish dancing then was very different to now. We used to get a lot of flack being at the Christian Brothers School and going to Irish dancing. But I really loved it. And I was runner up in the World Championships and I was an All-Ireland and I was an Ulster champion. But yes, I understood the dance form, but not the phenomena that Michael Flatley created.
And what was it like overcoming that illness then? Was that a difficult time that you had to, I mean, to have been in a pram at that age? That must have been difficult for you to deal with.
Well, I didn't know any different, you know, and I mean, going up and down stairs on my bum, you know, but it was just the time. I just don't know how I got better, but I was over a year in hospital on traction and things. And things seemed to improve and that's why I went to dancing, you know. So,
but getting over things like that, getting over your illness, getting over maybe the slack from the other fellas, do you think that that makes you stronger then in being kind of more ambitious?
No. It's horrendous when you're a child and you're bullied in any way. You know, it really is growing up in Derry. And at that time, it was pretty tough times. You know, the troubles were starting, like, for instance, in 69, when the troubles began, I was 9 years old. I was on the Bloody Sunday March. So that was a very difficult time. But with my family, because it was civil rights. Yeah, absolutely. My mother, my father, my young brother and me. And it was civil rights and we were all holding hands and walking. And then when the shooting started, it was something completely different. But when you're a child, you know, those things never leave you, you know. But and, you know, fortunately, the way I was reared was I respected all people and all rights. And I was never bitter. And I don't think I am today.
Mm-hmm. Was it difficult to leave Derry, or did you find that, you know, being a gay man who's a fashion designer in the city who's having all of that troubles at the time, was it necessary to have to move?
It was necessary for my education. So I came here and went to the National College of Art and Design. I actually went to the College of Marketing and Design first. And the person seated beside me was none other than Louise Kennedy. And we often laugh at that. And then I went on to NCAD and I think Louise left. So I came for my education. So I lived here since 1977. So I'm longer here than I was in Derry, but I love my home and I go home most weekends to my family. And I've always had a very strong connection to my family and to the rearing of the next generation. And I feel very proud about that.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen, can I ask you, have you heard these stories before from Jen, or what is it like hearing them?
Well, yeah, I have to say, I didn't realise about Bloody Sunday. I hadn't heard. That's amazing story.
Right.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, that was an amazing day in Derry. I mean, but people, I always really stress that it was civil rights and we were all like linking arms, holding hands, singing songs, walking along. And what happened then was something completely different.
And what happen?
Well, 13 people were murdered.
Did you see this close up?
Indeed, I did. One was brought into my grandmother's house and I remember a nurse saying, "Turn him over." So I helped to turn him over. We were trying to find an exit wound and there was no exit wound. And we found out that he was actually shot. And with an internal bullet that caused 28 bullet wounds inside of him. Now, he did survive it. And but to see the pallor or the colour of somebody changing when death's literally knocking at their door and you're a young kid and the bullets were just flying up and down the street. There was also a guy shot, which was called Mickey Kelly. And my brother's called Mickey. So my dad was crawling in his arms outside to see if it was him. And you'd get to a person and it wasn't him. There was a wonderful man, Mr. Johnston. All of the blood splatter was, you know, on the wall. Like, and he was this wonderful man that worked in a store that I went on to work in, selling fashion. And it was just normal people. And then there was a lovely young guy Duddy, and he was just 15 years old, and he was wearing those tight jeans of the 60s. And I know in evidence they tried to put nail bombs or whatever into his jeans, and they couldn't even go on. And then he was murdered at that time. And these are true living stories of people that I would have went to school with. And normally you would not come into contact with that. And then to be a fashion designer working with heads of state or bankers in London and, you know, having that privilege, you know, going forward. But it's just a normal life, really.
How does that shape you? Because it must be very difficult to kind of overcome that experience, especially when you're so young.
Not really. Thousands of people have done that, you know, and I'm no different to anybody else. You know, that was the time. And that's why, you know, the choice of music that I've made is Sarajevo, you know, with Pavarotti and U2, because it really reminds me of nations that had to struggle in life, and us as part of an Ireland and part of a Europe going forward. You know, that's just the life and times as it was.
Is there a time for keeping a distance? The time to turn your eyes away? Is there a time for keeping your head down?
And that was Sarajevo from U2 and Pavarotti, a choice of one of my guests, Jen Kelly, fashion designer. Jen, I want to ask you, what was the first piece that you ever designed and sold?
God, that took me back. actually, I was at school and my mother had bought me a pair of trousers and I thought they were a bit too wide. And I'd taken them all down the side and I had one piece of thread and a needle and I went up and down the entire side. And my mother was pressing my trousers or whatever and she says, what's wrong with these? And here was a great big lump of fabric on the inside. So that's probably the first thing.
So really, like, the background with your aunts coming back from the factory and working with the shirts, that was a good first step into, you know, altering your own clothes and then going to design your own clothes.
That's true. But there's a good history, you know, of shirt making in Derry. I mean, it was an industry that was throughout the world, you know, and there's a very sad tale of where they tell, you know, that the women from Derry went to India to teach them the technique, you know, of making shirts. Mm. And of course, the women of Derry thought it was a charitable thing and that it was going as part of, you know, teaching women what to do, and where, in fact, all of the industry then left their own hometown and was made abroad. And those people then were without in my hometown.
Mm-hmm. And Kathleen, what was the first designer piece that you bought?
Pat Crowley, when I was growing up, had a wonderful shop. I think it was in South Ann Street, off Grafton Street. It was just a treasure trove of wonderful things. So, like, I couldn't remotely afford anything in there. But I suppose I went in there often enough, and I suppose I got to know some of the shop assistants and got to know when they had their sales. So, yeah, so finally, after a lot of time wasting, I I purchased a really beautiful evening dress. It's sort of navy midnight blue taffeta with an asymmetric hem on it. Yeah, it's a beautiful dress. I wish I fitted into it. Someday I may go back and try it on again. But yeah, it's a beautiful dress.
And how old were you when you bought this?
In my very early 20s, yeah.
And that takes a lot of confidence to go into shops where you can't afford things. Well, I think it does.
Just probably, I took interest. I was just really interested to see what was in there. You could see lovely things in the window. And so I just really wanted to go in. So yeah, I went in a lot.
And where does that love of the lovely things come from?
I don't know where it comes from. I suppose it's just in you.
But you're not intimidated going into... Well, you weren't intimidated going into shops.
No, I might have felt a bit embarrassed, but it wasn't going to stop me going in.
That's good for you.
And we didn't bite.
Kathleen, our next piece of music is from the Dublin band Boomtown Rats. When did you hear this first and why do you want to listen to it now?
Well, I probably heard it first from my little cassette recorder player that I had when I was growing up in Mount Marion. I had Tonic for the Troops, which was one of their, well, iconic albums in my view. Rat Trap was their big hit when I was growing up. And so they were a Southside band. I think they came from Black Rock. You know, they were a band that you saw on Top of the Pop. So you just saw the possibility of things. And I suppose, you know, the 80s was a really great time music-wise. And I can't claim to be a big music aficionado, but there was just a great original music going on. Like, you know, you had mods, you had New Romantics, you still had the Beatles, you had punk, you had rock, you had US music. And Dublin, while there mightn't have been a lot of money in circulation, there was a lot of musical talent and a lot of bands in Dublin. Interestingly, I was listening to the radio in London earlier in the year, and Joe O'Connor had a show where he talked about the 80s music scene in Dublin. Now, I can't say I knew all of the bands that he knew, but it was really a treat to listen to him bringing you around Dublin, the different venues and the different bands. But for me, the Boomtown Rats pretty much just captured it all. So the song I've chosen isn't a Rat Trap, which, as I say, would have been the one I would have known best. It's She's So Modern. And why I've chosen that is sort of spinning forward to living in London with young children. I thought I might be going to an event where Bob Geldof would be present. And so I just thought, you know what? I'm going to go and I'm going to buy another copy of that record. So there's a lot of secondhand record shops in London. So off I went. I got my record and I brought it home. And on Saturday mornings, the children and I would like to listen to a bit of music, a bit of dancing. So I was just amazed at the reaction, like the electrifying reaction, particularly of my son to the music. He's eight. So She's So Modern is actually the first song in the second side. But anyway, we put that on first for whatever reason. He shot into the room. He did about three laps of the room. He might as well have climbed up the walls, up the ceiling and down the other side just for the effect it had. And so one of my daughters, you know, every now and then says, come on, let's go and listen to The Killer Rats. It's just great music.
Great. Well, let's listen to The Killer Rats. Here's the Boomtown Rats with She's So Modern. That's a great song. Thanks for choosing that, Kathleen. Mm. You said it was important that, you know, you're able to watch the Boomtown Rats on Top of the Pops, even though they're from Blackrock, you know, they're from Dublin. Was that helpful to you to see that even if you're just from Dublin, you can be successful internationally? Was that useful, do you think?
Well, absolutely. It was just great to see people from your locality getting ahead. And like there they were on Top of the Pops. I think they actually ripped up a picture of John Travolta. I think they were raging against the Greece epidemic. Yeah. So funny.
You've emigrated to London in the last 4 years. And was it difficult to kind of have to up sticks and move everything, including your family, to London at this time in your life?
It's not like maybe it was 20 or 30 years ago where London really was far from Dublin. Mm. The transport is much better and more affordable, and it is only 50 minutes away. So, and it's very easy to move into the UK. We are very welcome there. We go down very well, and it's really quite a pleasure to be there.
You had your children, and where is home for them? Do they see themselves as coming home to Dublin?
Yeah, they very much see themselves as Irish, but it's quite funny, the complicated thinking they have. We had a funny incident, actually. We were coming back from a trip. We had sort of stopped travelling with them because it had become slightly crazy. But anyway, we'd done this, and it was working very successfully. And my husband and I were sitting actually in front of the children, and we were kind of looking at each other thinking, gosh, you know, we might do this again. You know, there wasn't chaos going on behind us. And then we heard my son sort of engage in a conversation with someone across the aisle. And the man said, where are you from? And my son kind of has a very long-winded story about how, you know, he was born in Ireland, but he moved to England. And then my husband is American. So then occasionally we go to America to see my husband's family. And so there was a whole America bit mixed in. And then my son said, and where are you from? And he said, I'm from Las Vegas. And it was Mike Tyson.
Oh, my God.
So where do they think they're from? Like, I have to say, in making the decision to move to England, I was encouraged by the fact that I think it's good for children to see different things as they grow up. We certainly lived in England for a year when we were growing up. You know, it was a good experience. It made you a little bit, it pushed you out of your comfort zone and exposed you to different people and different situations. And so I suppose they have the benefit of that. But yes, I think they still consider themselves Irish if there's sort of a complicated overlay to it.
So how about you, Jen? Do you still see Derry as home, or has Dublin become home now?
I suppose as I get older, I sort of see Dublin, certainly I've been longer here. But I really do love my home in Derry. You know, my father's still alive and I have a house there with him. And I go to my sister's quite a bit. So all of my family members are there and we're very close. And every year we've always taken a family holiday together. Mm. So I go off with my sister and the kids and things. And, you know, your family is what knocks the spots off you, so you don't get any notions. So whilst I love Dublin and I love the life here, more and more I sort of find myself up there in Donegal or Derry at weekends.
So despite you designing for Naomi Campbell or Christy Turlington or the Princess of Saudi Arabia, your family don't take any nonsense?
No nonsense at all. You know, sit down there at the table, or would you mind go out and get some coal or something? Yeah, you're just like a normal family member. And I really love that.
And Jen, you make clothes for Kathleen all the time. Well, not all the time, but you make clothes for Kathleen every now and again. How about for your sisters? Would they request items from you?
Sale time in my place. You see, we sell more at sale time, you know, because anything we do for the collections, you know, ultimately you put on sale because, you know, you want to change it and you want to get new things. So there's always a bargain to be had. So if there's a coat or something going that I think one of my sisters or when they're down visiting, you know, because I work from home and they go into where the salon is or where the special rail is, and they come and commandeer it or take it and say, do you know, that would do me if you could only just do this to it or that to it. And that's pretty much how they get it, you know. Right. Yeah, I'm a sucker.
And Jen, what's the future for the business now? I mean, if it's a bespoke business, and so how will that survive and prosper in the future?
Well, that's an interesting one, and I'm not sure of that. You know, there is no doubt we're at a crossroads that, you know, all hands on deck trying to survive what is a recession here and a very real thing. You know, there has been all sorts of difficulties, you know, with banks and whatever that, you know, they are not accommodating at the moment. So we have to survive that. And, you know, we have to hold on to it like it is a home and business as well. So every day I find myself working more and more. There's not much holiday time and there's not much spare cash to go around. But, you know, with all the goodwill in the world, you have to have a clear business strategy, and new markets are no doubt important. We need everybody, you know, in Ireland to buy Irish and think of it when they're, you know, selecting something nice. But also, you know, I have to get out there and do different things, you know. So I'm very proud of what we do, but it has to be relevant. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Kathleen, to finish, our last piece of music is Steve Winwood with Higher Love. Now, tell me about this piece of music and why you chose it, because I think it's been influenced slightly by your husband. Is that correct?
Well that's right. I met Dean, my husband, in 2001. Dean's from Maine in America. So as I say, we met in 2001, and there's now Dean came over to Ireland with two friends to set up a business. And I think his plan was to set up the business, to sell the business, and then to go back to the States. And as he says himself, two out of three ain't bad. He did the first two bits and then he got stuck. He met me. So again, in terms of the musical selection in our house, there's a strong influence of Dean's music. And so Steve Winwood is part of that. And I suppose I particularly like that. There's a number of songs from Steve Winwood that I like a lot.
Well, thank you so much, designer Jen Kelly and Kathleen Garrett, partner in Arthur Cox.
Thanks.
And best of luck with the Arthur Cox Irish Fashion Showcase in New York. And we'll finish with this piece of music, Steve Winwood, Higher Love.
Evening and Company on RTE Radio 1. Podcast the show at rte.ie/radio player.